Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Greetings, friends. I'm Mariquita Guerrera.
And I'm Natalia Santana.
And we are here to talk about Belabored, the 2020 book by Liz Lenz that was published by Bold Type Books. I picked up this book last year because I was pregnant and I was trying to get the COVID vaccine. It had just come out right at the end of my first trimester. And my place of employment was providing it, but they didn't want to give me one of the vaccines because they thought there was too much liability in giving that to me when I was pregnant. And I was kind of pissed about that because I was like, this is my body and I'm not a fetus incubator. Like, I'm a person and I want to be vaccinated against COVID. And so I had to go through this whole rigmarole where I got like a sign off from my doctor. And like, by the time I got that all done, they were fine giving me the vaccine anyway and didn't need the piece of paper. But that's how I ended up with this book. A little bit about Belabored. It's a pretty honest portrayal of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. It puts emphasis on the experiences of the birthing parent. Lenz makes note that this isn't a book just for cis white ladies, but she is a cis white lady, like a thin cis white lady. So not a ton is explored outside of that experience. She does do more than just like nod to it or nod to the challenges faced by trans parents or parents of color or low-income parents, but the book is pretty overwhelmingly specific to her situation and experiences. Kind of feels more to me like a series of essays than like a whole complete book, but I still really think it's important to talk about. So that's why we're here today. And
I have not read the book.
Yeah.
I have not read the book. I'm here purely as color commentary. We're going to try this new format out and see how it works. But I think I mostly just wanted another reason to talk to Mariquita. And that is how I pitched this to her. I said, can I be your peanut gallery?
Here we are.
And she said, okay.
Well, we're both parents and we've both gone through this experience at different times in our life and from different positions. And so, you know, I think it's interesting to have this discussion because a lot of the experiences we've had are universal nonetheless, you know?
That is true. That is true. So tell us about the book.
Well,
tell us, what'd you love? What'd you hate? What was your favorite fact?
Oh, any of my gosh. Well, I want to start really quickly with a content warning because the book is, we're not going to talk too much about these sorts of things, but the book itself does discuss a lot of loss and infant loss and death in its pages. So if you're interested in this topic, but that's something that you're feeling really sensitive to, you know, skip it. There are other works that you could find that cover the same ground that might not have that sort of content in there that might trigger you and upset you. So starting there, the introduction to me felt like the most important, most valuable chapter of the book, which is sort of funny. It kind of overpromises.
Starting off strong.
It kind of overpromises. I mean, the full title of the book is Belabored, A Vindication of the Rights of Pregnant Women. But Lenz goes out of her way during the introduction to say that it's not, you know, just for cis women, you know, and that she talks about how this country really hurts and damages women of color, low-income women, trans parents, that sorts of thing. It's single by choice. Parents, people who are dealing with infertility, like there's just all these different layers that people deal with that are really, really challenging.
And it makes you wonder if the choice to specifically use women on the cover was a political choice made by the publisher. Does the author have that kind of like last say, or do they not? And then what does that mean as an author when you don't have that kind of control over your finished product that you've devoted years of your life to, probably in writing? So I find that, as somebody who has zero context, very interesting.
Yeah, it did feel to me like this was sort of her way of saying, like, I know what the cover says, but this book isn't just for, you know.
Yeah.
Late.
But in the way it is, because it's just based on my cis experience.
For sure. For sure. Yeah.
You know what? We're trying. We're moving something, something, perfection, not progress, something, something.
Exactly. I'm not here to like call her out on these things. I appreciate that she put this together and I appreciate for that sure. She made that comment. And I would love to see the publishing industry maybe publish a book from someone that doesn't look like her, you know,
yeah,
on these things. But she does mention, and this is sort of interesting, you know, who gets to be designated a mother in the United States and like what sort of imagery we see of mothers and birth announcements. And like, overwhelmingly, this is like a blonde white lady in her like late 20s with like gauzy silk around her and like a field holding her belly, you know.
Oh God. I never took any of those pictures because I was so poor when I had my kids and so young and so just wildly unprepared for what was happening that I didn't think to like, oh man, you know what I need? I need a picture of me in a field holding my belly.
Yeah.
In this weird Madonna whore status, because usually it's transparent in some way. So you can see the breasts or you can see the bare belly. So it's like lightly sexualized, but you're still a mom. So you still had to like be down with that Madonna vibe. Mm-hmm. No me gusta.
Yeah.
No me gusta.
Yeah.
But I didn't do any of that.
Well,
did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't because, well, for a lot of reasons. One, it doesn't appeal to me. The aesthetic doesn't appeal to me. I don't want to sort of.
You're not a wood nymph.
I'm so not a wood nymph. I'm far from a wood nymph. I don't do well in the woods, actually. I just thought it was kind of, for me, waste of time. I thought it looked like I would be cold most of the time and I had to look like I was having a good time. And like, that's just not really my thing, you know?
You just crushed the entire film industry. Like, that's what it is. You're always cold and you have to pretend that you're having a good time.
Like, and I'm supposed to pay somebody an exorbitant amount of money to like do this for me. You know, no thanks. Yeah.
It is bonker balls.
Yeah.
What people will pay for the aesthetic.
Yeah.
But that's not the point of this book. So anyways.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, what we want to talk about when we're thinking about that image, you know, and you can see it's like all over Pinterest and like Instagram and whatever, is like, who's missing from these pictures? Like, who's missing from this imagery? And what happens when those people are missing from the imagery, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, the people that I follow on social media usually are people of color because that's just my orbit, right? Those are the people that I surround myself by. And the birthing announcements sometimes will be similar in kind of vibe, but much more, I want to say down to earth or like less pretentious, but I wonder, is that my bias? You know, like, is that my bias clouding it? I don't know. But usually it's like you get a text message from your tia that somebody's pregnant. I just got one today, actually. Oh. I didn't even get it. My mom got one. One of my cousins is pregnant. They're having, I think, a baby boy. And
mazel tov.
That's how the family found out. There was no like huge picture reveal.
Yeah, no. Ugh. Nobody's mother-in-law like ruined the reveal by announcing it on Facebook. It like just...
It was through WhatsApp, like communication platform of the Caribbean. Thank you so much.
Oh my God. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I didn't even announce on social media. It was, to me, it's a private thing too. And
you're so mysterious though.
Just very enigmatic. I don't know who's like, you know, watching my things and looking at I get the most random spam comments from people who like try to solicit me to like take them on as like a sugar daddy. I'm like, you do know that I'm almost 40, right? Like, you're not, I'm the wrong person for you.
I don't know, man. I haven't been appealed to be a sugar baby yet, but boy, howdy, when that first message comes.
Oh, yeah.
Austin, if you're hearing this, no, you're not. No, you're not.
Sorry, we're digressing a little bit.
Yes, yes. Our bad. Our bad.
But, you know, we put these bodies on display and we sort of idealize what they look like. But at the same time, we really politicize and legislate bodies, especially
absolutely
people that have uteruses.
God forbid we regulate anything as much as we regulate a uterus.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Texas right now is going through something, you know.
You know, it's a real travesty as somebody who's grown up in a post-Roe world and who's been told the entire time that I've been, you know, socially conscious or whatever, that if Roe goes away, that's it. That's the end for me. It's all back alley abortions and all of that jazz. And to watch it happen in my lifetime was just not something that I did not have that anywhere near my bingo card. Watching women get essentially hunted by people who are outside, or not even women, watching birthing people get hunted by people who are outside of their situation, who whatever, and they can receive a bounty payment yeah. out of it. Like, that's disgusting. And the fact that the Supreme Court is made up of such a conservative, insert slur here, group of people is wildly unsettling. So like I got to grow up with the ability of getting an abortion if I wanted to, if I needed to, if I had to. And I'm legitimately asking myself, like, is that something that my children will grow up to have? Is that a right that they'll grow up to have as people with uteruses? Like,
yeah,
I didn't think we'd get here.
Yeah.
In less than 30 years.
Yeah. It's
that I've been alive.
It's really heartbreaking because, you know, Texas also has the highest rate. Last I checked, the highest rate of teen pregnancies in the nation as well. And so who is this affecting? You know, we've talked about this before. This isn't going to affect people like me, you know, people like me. I could, if I was living in Texas and I needed to have an abortion, I could transport myself somewhere to get an abortion. I could pay for one. I could go to my like regular doctor and no one would even know I was at an abortion, you know, clinic. Mm-hmm. I would just be at my regular OB and I could, you know, get done what I needed to get done. And it wouldn't be an inconvenience for me. I mean, a piece of disclosure here is that I have had an abortion and I had one when I was 26 and I did it because even though I spent my whole life since I was a little itty bitty, tiny little baby wanting to have a child of my own. When I was 26 and found myself pregnant, I didn't have a good job. I didn't have any kind of income stability. I was far away from the man that I was with. I knew that if I moved there, pregnancy was a pre-existing condition at that time, so I wouldn't be able to get health insurance. If he moved here, his student bills were too high and he wouldn't be able to get a job. It was just one of those like perfect storm things where I went with a heavy heart and I made this decision because I know what it's like to grow up super poor. And I yeah. couldn't do that in good conscience. I couldn't do that. And I had the ability to make that choice.
And, you know, my situation was the opposite when I was younger. There was no way. If I had found myself pregnant at 26, I mean, I had my kids when I was in my early 20s. There was no way that I could have gotten an abortion. I didn't have the funds. I didn't have the ability to leave the state. I was on my parents' insurance. Like, I was, oh my God, it would have been awful. I am very lucky that I was in a stable relationship with a partner that I really loved and all of that jazz. But I am fully aware the boat that I would have been in if I had been 16 and gotten pregnant, if I had been 20 and gotten pregnant, if I had been any of these things. And legislating over bodies is just icky to begin yeah. with. It's such a infantilizing way to look at a whole person. And I love that you can see me as a fetus incubator, but believe it or not, I'm a whole person, yeah. a whole person. Yeah. And that's just not what we're seeing from the courts, or we're seeing very like bare minimal recognition of our personhood. Yeah. Over. And you know what, having been pregnant, and I don't know if this was your experience, I've gone through two pregnancies that were very successful, very healthy, very, you know, nothing was wrong. And I wouldn't wish pregnancy on my worst
enemy. No, no.
There is absolutely, it changes you forever, not just physically. And those changes are for real, but it changes you emotionally. It changes you mentally. Having to go through birth as a whole is monumentally traumatic. I don't give a shit what anybody says. Oh, it's the most natural process alive. You know what else is natural? Ebola. Yeah. I don't want that either. Yeah.
And that's ableist language too, because not everybody's body like can go through labor in a way that is, I mean, big quotes
normal around, yeah, with heavy,
right, exactly, exactly. And not only just how onerous and taxing pregnancy is, but a newborn and then an infant and then a toddler and all these sorts of things. It's really, really challenging. And we're not talking about a concept here. We're not talking about like a philosophical thought. This is another human being. When you bring that person into the world, that is now another human being who your actions affect and whose actions affect you. And to force that on someone is, I can't imagine a crueler thing to do to people. I really, really can't, you know.
There are like four things that might be crueler and they're all unmentionable. Yeah. But I mean, third trimester pregnancy when you're huge is just 0 out of 10 stars. Yeah. Do not.
Yeah. Don't. No.
If this is if I could review it on Amazon or Yelp, it would be.
Wish I could give it 0 stars, but I can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's how my review would start. I wish I could give this negative stars. Okay. I was not having a good time. Does the book talk about, I know that it's mostly from the author's perspective, but does she bring in any of the political kind of environment?
Sure. She talks a little bit about it. She does talk about too, not just forcing people to give birth by preventing them from being able to have abortions, but also penalizing them if they've had a miscarriage or a stillbirth. And the penalties, this isn't some kind of, you know, unbelievable thing, incredible thing that doesn't happen. Just the end of October, there was a Native woman in Oklahoma whose name is Brittany Pulau, and I might be mispronouncing her surname, that was just convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to 4 years in state prison for having a miscarriage. You know, this is 2021.
How do you reconcile that? How do you, I guess I sometimes wonder how we get up in the morning and put one foot in front of another in a world that tells someone who presumably wanted the child, who presumably was not looking to lose their fetus and was looking forward to bringing that person into the world, and then saying, JK, no, you went through something really bad, but I'm going to lock you up for,
I mean, I don't know if this person wanted to give birth or not. And it doesn't really matter. You know,
that's true. That's true. That was, see, that's my bias. Oh, snap. Gents calling. I'm feeling it.
Another disclosure. I had a miscarriage as well. And like your body goes through so much pain. I don't know if you've been through this, and I'm not asking you to share, but like you go through so much pain, emotional pain, physical pain. Even if you didn't want this pregnancy, you're still flushing all those hormones out. You're still feeling a lot of things, and you don't deserve for a fucking second to be taken into a court of law. You know, it's, so Liz Lenz says about miscarriage and about how the great proportion of people that have one feel culpable for it, even though they're not. She says absolutely. The pro-life movement absolutely. Wants them to feel this way. We live in a culture that wants to limit reproductive rights and restricts access to healthcare, yet blames a woman when her body does exactly what it needs to when rejecting a non-viable fetus. That's what happens. It's non-viable. It's not somebody's fault, and we shouldn't be sending them to prison for it, whether or not they made statements in the past that they wanted this pregnancy, whether or not they've done things in the past that might have jeopardized the pregnancy. It's not, this is penalizing a whole human being for something that happened to a fetus. And I'm sorry, I love my baby very much, and I'm real glad she's here. But if
she's hella
cute, she hadn't made it, you know, if we hadn't gotten all the way to full term and she hadn't been born, if someone tried to take me to court for that, forget it.
How do you burn it? I would just burn it all. I would legitimately try to burn it all down.
Our friends Get Bullish are the minds behind slogans like "We will dance on the graves of the patriarchy and drink the bitter tears of mediocre men." And "Out of Patience with Deeply Disappointing Men in Unmerited Positions of Authority." Available on mugs and keychains. How about a shirt that says, "I've heard enough from old white men"? We've got you covered. But feminist-owned Get Bullish wants you to know that they don't have just aggressively patriarchy-mocking pens, socks, holiday ornaments, and more. They actually have over 6,000 gift items, including, surprisingly, stuff for your dad. Really. Grandmas, bosses, clients, sex buddies, who doesn't love funny notepads or wacky socks or an apron that says something about cats? Delight and amuse the whole fam. You can do all your holiday shopping and shop small and woman-owned at shop.getbullish.com. Use code BOOKCLUB10 throughout November for 10% off your whole holiday haul. That's shop.getbullish.co. That's shop.getbullish.com and use code BOOKCLUB10.
But, you know, there is, outside of pregnancy loss, there's still a real paternalistic control over pregnant bodies. And when you're pregnant, you can go and order a coffee and like someone has something to say about it, you know?
Oh my God. The amount of people who asked me while I was pregnant both times, "Are you sure you want to eat, drink, do that?" was wild. Like, believe it or not, I don't owe you a goddamn explanation of what I'm doing. You have no idea. You know what else there is, I feel like, besides a paternalistic view of motherhood? And I don't know, she probably didn't get into this because she's a cis white woman, but I think there's also a nationalistic view of motherhood, wherein Americans believe that their way is the best way and the only way to be a pregnant person, to be a parent afterwards. And it is interesting, the differences that I have experienced with like my cousins who are in the Caribbean, or other family members or like friends who live outside of the US in various places, and just the different way that that gets navigated, those moments get navigated, the advice is given, the tone, the help, the this, the that. I remember saying to someone, well, in France, they can have wine. I think I was just kind of at my wit's end. I don't even like wine. I was like, in France, they can have wine when they're pregnant. Get off my balls because I'm having some coffee. And they were like, well, those French babies, you know, there's probably something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And so it seems like it starts from the womb. And then we've got this air of nationalism and exceptionalism that we don't deserve. And we carry that through the rest of a life, anybody's life. And I wonder if there are any books about that.
I don't know, but I would hope so. And if there are, please someone tell us about them, because I want to read it.
For sure. Like, tell me how they're raising babies in New Zealand. But like, Maori New Zealand.
I want to know if any other country in the world martyrs mothers as thoroughly and consistently as we do here. You know, it just seems like as soon as you become a mother, you are supposed to willingly and happily give up physical autonomy. You're supposed to give up your individual pursuits. You're supposed to feel guilty about wanting to do things for yourself. You know, you're supposed to be blood, sweat, and tears all for this child. And then the thanks you get for that is not paid family leave.
Yeah,
it's not access to healthcare. It's not affordable childcare. It's not affordable pre-K. It's not any of these other things. It's not a postpartum doula coming into your house to make sure you're doing okay. It's, you know, it's none of that stuff.
Not free or paid college to make sure that this kid that you've donated all of your blood, sweat, and tears to can then become a productive member of society and thus return that investment.
No.
Return money on that investment. It's none of it. No. I can tell you that in Dominican Republic, sample size, my family, right? my cousins who have children are very much not martyred.
Yeah.
They have nannies, they have cooks, they have gardeners, they have all of these services. That's what they call them. They call them mm-hmm. services that come in and they help with the children. They go to private schools because you can't do anything in public. Like you can't go to public schools in Dominican Republic. And they are very much expected to still be available to be a wife, mm-hmm. to be a sexual person, to cater to your husband or spouse. Well, no, husband, because it's a very patriarchal society. So instead of just killing yourself over your kid, you are expected to kind of hand over a lot of the child stuff and just kill yourself over your husband.
Yeah. See, like, that doesn't sound better to me.
No, it's totally not. It's a different kind of hell. It's a different kind of hell.
Yeah. And I don't think.
And I'm seen as the black sheep in my family because I continue to pursue my individual desires. And I did I still do all the things that I want to do within the bounds of a pandemic. And I've invested too many dollars in this person to just let it all go to waste because I had kids at 21.
Yeah.
Like I invested too many dollars.
Yeah.
I'm almost done. Like I'm almost half baked.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to, you know, be a stay-at-home mom, say, or wanting to dedicate all your time and your energy to your kid. There's nothing wrong with
it. As long as it's your choice.
What's wrong with it is being forced to do that and being forced to also do all these other things and be everything for everyone. And then the only thing you get out of it, you know, is like, okay, listen, I'm sure the art's really cute, but like also like some like card in a Hallmark Channel like feature and bottomless mimosas once a year. You know, it's not... it doesn't have to be this way, you know?
It really doesn't. It's interesting looking at parenthood. I tend to work with a lot of older people given my field, and it is very interesting to see the women who are much older than me, who are close to retiring, they have adult children, look at me and say things like, you know, you keep on doing what you're doing. I never had that chance. And these are like smart, super capable, badass women who are like silently rooting for me on the other side because I'm like, no, I keep on doing whatever I want to do. Like these kids have to learn that the world doesn't revolve around
them. Yeah.
As awful as that. We're going to get so much, I hope, hate mail, because people are going to listen to this and they're going to be like, oh my God, do these two even like kids?
Well, you know what that reminds me of, Natalia?
Oh, tell me.
Mom shaming.
Oh,
all right.
My least favorite sport.
Yeah. So mom shaming, someone wants to shame me for like the way I'm raising my child, who by the way is also not just cute, but like very smart and capable and lovely. You know, if someone wants...
She is an infant. Give me time. And I've never met her in person. I know that she's all of those things. It goes without saying, except that it goes with saying.
I mean, I know she's just teething right now, but like, I feel like the potential in her is strong. But you know, if someone wants to shame me, if they want to tell me that I'm a bad person because on the weekends I take, you know, an hour out of my morning and I go for a run instead of like being here in case she cries for me, you know, that is probably going to just piss me off, but it's not going to like create some real significant problems in my life. But if I was a lower income person, if I was, you know, a young Black mother, if I was a Native parent, you know, someone wanting to call me a bad parent could bring the authorities into my life, you know, and could create real issues for me.
Absolutely. I am a brown person and I have two white passing children. They are not white because race is a construct, but they are white passing. And when I was, I think my oldest was 2 or 3, somebody asked me if I was her nanny.
Jesus.
And I said, no, I'm her mother. And she said, oh, well, you're not taking very good care of her. We were at the park and the kid was playing and whatever. And to your point, if that woman had taken it one step further, right? One step, calling the police because she thought my child was being in a endangered or neglectful, you know, household or whatever, I'd have to fight for my life to get the authorities off my case, you know? Yeah. It would not, people, they don't look like me. They don't talk like me. They talk like me, but they don't look like they could be my kids. So then it's proving that I am their parent, that I am this. It's just wild. And these are experiences that I've never, ever heard another white person talk about, ever. Like, nobody looks at Becky and her kids, Chrysanthemum and Tallulah, and wonders if she's their mom. But that happened to me more than once.
Yeah.
More than once with both of my... As I was nursing one, somebody asked if I was her mother. Nah, lady, I flopped these tits out for everyone.
Like, I just felt like whipping a boob out and putting it in this kid's mouth.
I'm a wet nurse for a rich family. Like, what do you want from my life? There are people who are in jail now for registering their kids with the wrong school address, using a different address to register their kids for school. Excuse me. There are kids who are people who are in jail for letting their kids play outside without adult supervision, like we all did. And they've gotten longer prison sentences and they will probably not get their children back than people who actually stormed the Capitol and tried to insurrect our democracy. And that is bullshit, bullshit, and a disgraceful stain on our country. Honestly,
yeah,
there's no other way to put it. Like, that those two worlds exist is fucking bananas.
So apparently, okay, in 1997, the Adoption and Safe Families Act requires states to terminate parental rights for children who have been in foster care for 15 of the last 22 months.
Is that even... So I'm...
Did that give you goosebumps? And that's hurtful, right?
I'm trying to understand. So if I've been in foster care for 15 months...
15 of the last 22 months.
Then the state can terminate my parental rights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder what the actual...
How often that happens?
Yeah, what the use rate is of that law. Because I have a few friends who foster and stuff, and parents who, by all accounts, are not capable of being safe for their children maintain their parental rights for far longer than 15 months. Years. But that's bananas. That's written into law.
Yeah, it is.
Up and lose my kid 15 months.
Yeah. And because the average sentence for women in prison is 18 months, by the time parents are released, it's likely they will no longer have custody of their children.
And you think about what we're doing to immigrants at the border who we've separated the children from the families, from the adult family members, or children who have arrived without an adult and they just get sent into the foster care system, never to be seen again.
Yeah.
And reunification, if it happens, is bad, bad for just everyone involved. Why do we do this? Why do we talk about these?
Oh, God.
Bummer.
I don't know. I think because, you know, we get so worked up about these things, and a lot of them, it's just sort of like, I kind of want to be like, do you, Do you know? Like, this is so bad. Like, did you know? I'm going to throw in another data point for you, that a European study found that offering 40 weeks of paid leave decreased the rate of infant death by 20%. Okay. 40 weeks. How many weeks of paid leave do we get in this country, Natalia?
Absolutely zero.
Zero. None.
In Dominican Republic, you get 8 weeks.
It's just
of paid leave.
I mean, the amount of stuff that we could sit here and talk about it, because we haven't even talked about how women of color, people of color, have their health concerns minimized, and it leads to an intensely high maternal mortality rate in this country. Absolutely. One of the highest, you know, and 60% of those deaths are preventable, you know, because we just don't listen to people. We especially don't listen to people of color when they tell us what they're going through.
My favorite is that anxiety is the new hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
So doctors wave away legitimate concerns as anxiety, the same way that doctors used to wave away legitimate concerns as hysteria.
Yeah.
And ain't that some shit?
Yeah. Ain't, I mean, we haven't talked about a lot of the things in this book that I would love to talk about, but we can't be here all night. So
we can.
Much as I love to talk with you.
I know. So much fun.
Yeah. We like to end these discussions with a call to action.
Absolutely. I have several call to actions, and they're all going to be the same thing that I say all the time because it works. And my call to action is to vote. It is to vote. It is to vote in local elections, because that's your school board, that's your city commissioner, that's your superintendent. These are people that are going to guide whether or not a new daycare gets zoned, whether or not a new school gets built, how the funding for that school will go. These are the people who are making the day-to-day decisions. Vote locally, not just state or federal levels. My other call to action is to call your representatives. Call your representatives at every level of government. Explain to them what you need. If you are living in a place where there's no quality childcare, then you need to find out why that is. Is it a zoning issue? Is it a rent issue? Is it housing? Again, a lot of these issues are intersectional. And if we don't look at them that way, if we just try to see it as a woman's issue, and the quotes here are doing some heavy lifting, then we're never going to get to the bottom of it. Because so often it's the unsexy laws that really come into play. Think about your sheriff. Think about, you know, the power that they have to affect policy in their locations. That means that, you know, is your sheriff going to be out trolling for kids who are out on the loose, or is your sheriff going to be out trolling for kids who are Black and may have a dime bag? Is your, what are the priorities of your local sheriff? How do they treat their community? Are they a part of it, or are they the protector of the community? Local elections matter. And I say vote, 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 and call your elected representatives and let them know what your issues are and what you need to see for your community. Because until the United States kind of has a come to Jesus moment and decides that we are going to invest in people, right? And that's just not birthing people. That's not just babies. That's not any of those things. But until the day that we kind of keep on shitting on people and instead buy another fucking Panzer tank or whatever, nothing's going to change. We need to reevaluate our priorities as a nation. And it unfortunately is not going to come from the top down. Nothing ever comes from the top down except for poop. So we're going to have to start from the bottom up.
Yeah.
And that is my impassioned plea for voting and talking to people, which I know are super fun call to actions.
Well, I would add into that, if you're employed, lobbying your employer for better health insurance coverage, for better leave policies, whether you're someone who has a child, wants to have a child, doesn't want to have a child, you know, making sure that we are covering people, that we're taking care of one another. And on top of that, check in with your pals. If you have a friend that is going through fertility struggles, if you have a friend who just had a baby, if you have a friend who has, you know, school age kids. This is a real tough time for folks.
We are straight up not having a good time.
Not having a good time. You know what I do? 11 and a half hours of the day, I work with my infant. 11 and a half hours of the day, because she takes time away from my job. So I'm working extra hours to make up for that, you know, so that I'm not doing something I'm not supposed to be doing, but I'm trying to answer emails, holding her on my hip and typing with one hand and hoping I don't accidentally hit send after I've accidentally typed in a swear word or something, you know, like it's extremely stressful. I'm very tired. I'm very tired. And there's just no childcare here for me right now. So this is my life.
If we continue to sacrifice our parents, our children on the altar of capitalism, we're going to get to a point where there's nobody left to sacrifice because nobody's going to want to have kids. Nobody's going to want to do anything. And unfortunately, the way that this world works is you have to have a replacement population, and that's not happening. So, I mean, either we deal with this now or we're all batteries for the robots in the Matrix later. Yeah. There's no kind of ifs, ands, or buts.
Well, thank you for this uplifting conversation, Natalia. I love talking with you.
It is always a joy. Thanks for letting me be your peanut gallery. I really appreciate it. Yeah. But as always, we want to hear from you. Have you successfully lobbied a workplace? Have you successfully implemented change? Do you just want to commiserate? Reach out to us. As always, you can catch me on Instagram at Stitchcraft, the letter N, Wizardry, or on Twitter, where I am increasingly unhinged as finals approach, at Nat San Paul. Mariquita.
You can find me on Instagram at @O_Murray. And that's the only place you can find me online. And I'm not there that often, but I am there sometimes. So please do, you know, slide into my DMs with your conversation about being a parent.
Do not slide into Marikita's DMs. Do not. Just like tag us and shit. Just, yeah, no, we're not sliding.
See, you're DMs. Like trying to stir up trouble. I don't have enough going on.
Exactly. And if there's something that you heard on this podcast that you think is better explored in a different book, please let us know those titles as well. And we will definitely update our show notes or our blog post to include them, because it takes a community, takes a village to get educated, takes a village to raise a family, takes a village to move forward. And you are our village.
Finally,
so on that note,
last point, if you listen to this podcast and you think we're bad mothers, just keep that to yourself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could tussle, but I don't think you'll like the end result.
No. Thank you so much. Until next time.